The following talk was recorded at Libra Planet 2022, Living Liberation, an annual conference on current issues in ethics, social justice, and technology from the Free Software Foundation. Libra Planet is a live conference, and speakers often use slides and other visual tools to assist their presentation. You can see the videos of these talks at media.libraplanet.org or on the FSF PeerTube channel. Libra Planet speakers do not represent the mission of the Free Software Foundation. We host speakers talking about their uses of free software in different kinds of political and commercial work. The FSF supports their freedom, but does not take a position on any political issues other than those necessary to uphold the principles of free software. Like all the FSF's work on behalf of the freedom of all computer users, Libra Planet is made possible by thousands of individuals. To keep our work going, please consider becoming an associate member via my.fsf.org/join or making a donation at my.fsf.org/donate. You can stay informed by subscribing to our newsletter, The Free Software Supporter, at fsf.org/fss. For more information on Libra Planet, you can visit libraplanet.org/conference.
Welcome, everyone, to the Room with the Strongest Winds. We're back in Neptune here. This talk is titled Building a Liberated Home for Myself and Others. It will be presented by Abbas Abina. Abbas is a hacker, entrepreneur, and free software activist. As a founder of DeepRoot GNU/Linux, he has helped organizations of all sizes and sectors implement free software in various forms. Without further ado, here's the great Abbas.
Thank you, Patrick. My name is Abbas, and what I'd be talking about today is about how we can sort of build a liberated home for ourselves and others. I'd like to share some of my own experiences in doing this and how I see this whole landscape of being able to do everything that we need to do at home with free software. A little bit about what I do. I've been using GNU Linux since about 98 when I was a student in college. And I started DeepRoot in 2000. And the goal was to work with organizations to offer support for free software. And the point being that, well, free software is good, but unless someone offers support for it or services for it, maybe enough people will not use it. Now I also build hardware, which gives people more places on which they can run free software. So that's the aspect that I'll be talking about today. Now let's just get into, let's look at a very wide perspective. You know, all these years, what have we been working on? One of the most important things that we have all decided to collaborate on together and the free software community has been working on is to do everything with free software and all the time, no exceptions. All of us hope for, you know, being able to do this. All of us hope for not having to make any compromises as well. And what we do is we contribute in our own ways. We write software, some of us document it, some of us help others in building solutions for it, and so on and so forth. But things are not so easy, and the context in which we're talking about, there are quite a few challenges in being able to live your life with free software, with this intended goal of using free software everywhere and for everything. So let's consider two small scenarios. The first one. What are the chances that if you purchase something today, it would not require internet access or call home, or it would allow you the freedom to learn, hack, fix, extend, and it would also allow you to be in complete control? And if it could provide all these things, it would still function and operate as defined by the people who built it. Now, I'm talking about this from a perspective of what generally happens if we make good choices, and we might not have such products in our lives. But more often than not, if you just bought something over the internet or from a store, and it had a computer inside it, More often than not, it would require internet access. Something as simple as a wireless switch, which all it does is it puts on a light for you. But even that would require internet access. That would still call home in the sense that it was sending data about you to its parent company and so on. Now, the reason I'm posing this question is because I feel we don't ask this question enough, and we'll come to why we probably don't do that. But I think it's important that we were able to ask this question to ourselves every time we purchase something or we use something, and see what answers came up. And I think if we could know what those answers are, it would help us change those answers if we wish to do that. Now let's look at something else. How would you feel if your daughter asked you to show her something about how something worked, and you were forced to admit that you couldn't do that? Let's say there is a product here, there is a product with me, and you know, my daughter said, can you show me how it works? Can you take it apart? Can you show me what's inside it? Can I take it apart and then put it back together, and in that process learn about how it works? Well, unfortunately, most products like that are not designed to provide this access to this information to you. A lot of these products have their core functionality defined by software. And if you opened it up, all you would see are some chips, maybe you would see some flash storage, you would see things like that. But even that would not enable you to understand what's going on, because the most important part of that product, the software, is missing. You don't have access to the software or its source code. Most of the time, you don't even have means of replacing that software with something else. And in all this, the most unfortunate part is that I have to tell her that, well, I'm sorry, I can't tell you how it works. I can tell you in an abstract way how it works, but not specifically about this product, because I don't have its source code. And the people who made this product, they decided not to share it with us, right? Now that becomes a very difficult situation. I personally would never want to be in a situation where I have to give answers like these. I would be personally ashamed to give answers like these, to define what sort of things we could learn about and we were permitted to learn about, and what sort of things we were not permitted to learn about. So that's where the problem lies. Today we have a lot more computers around us. These computers don't necessarily have to be in the form that we expect computers to be. When you look at something as a computer, we envision a laptop or a desktop computer, which means there is a screen, there is a keyboard, there is a way to interface some storage into it. And then there are general purpose ports like USB ports, and then you would have Ethernet and HDMI or something like that. Well, today computers don't look like that. Today, computers exist in very, very diverse forms. And if you had something in your hand, and it was an electronic device, and it ran software inside it, a lot of times you wouldn't even consider that device or that piece of hardware as a computer. Now that's the whole problem. Because there are computers all around us, computers require software. We call that software firmware when that's very closely linked to the hardware, when that's not a complete operating system, but it has very, very specific, sometimes even very small device specific functionality. Or it could even have an operating system inside it. You never know, actually. The point I'm trying to make is that because there are so many more computers, there are so many more places where software runs. And hence, there are so many more places where we don't have control, which we would have if those places were running free software. Now, we've all been trying to run free software everywhere. And I'm sure most of us here in this forum are actually able to do that and are actually able to live their lives and do all their work using free software. But what about these computers that are not apparent, that are not in front of us in conventional forms? Well, how do we work with these computers? So that's a problem that I wish to solve. And these computers can, like I said, they're in various forms. All these things that you see over here, all these things have software in them. a lot of these things connect to the network. A lot of things connect to the internet as well. And all this functionality is implemented using software. So hence, I would call all of these as computers. So when you look at something like a television today, most televisions have operating systems inside them. They have software inside them, and they can do a lot of things like connecting to the internet, showing you videos off the internet, or you know, streaming something from the internet, and so on. I look at products like these in two broad categories. There is the product of the type called Connected X and Smart Y. These are just common names that developers and companies give to such products. But these are ways of noticing that a product, a device, an appliance that you have next to you might actually be a computer. And I think that we need to really start thinking about these things. How did that Connected X get into our lives, or that Smart Y? Why did we purchase it? What were the functionality that we were wishing to gain out of having possession of that device? Well, maybe we were looking at having some convenience. Maybe it offered us access to something we didn't have access to earlier. Maybe it let us do something faster. You know, there are so many reasons why we might have those things in our lives. But if the goal that we are working towards individually and together as a community, if the goal is that we don't wish to use proprietary software anywhere, we don't wish to be disrespected, we don't wish to be enslaved by devices like these, well, then we have to start rejecting them. And of course, rejecting them is not a simple thing to do. A lot of times these devices bind themselves to our lives very closely. Sometimes our very basic, you know, day-to-day activities, our ability to communicate with others, for example, get very closely tied to these devices. So it might not be possible to just remove them, but I think it's very important to think about what these devices are doing to us, how they are, you know, limiting our freedoms. Obviously, when we don't have access to the source code, when we don't have the ability to, you know, look at how the device works in any way, that's a limitation on our freedoms. We don't have any of those four freedoms which we would have if the device was running free software. These devices, these computers can spy on us and share information about us with others. Well, why can they do that? Well, almost anything can do that. But if that something were running free software, we might actually be able to know that it's doing it, and we might be able to fix it. We might be able to remove that malware which spies on us, and we would be able to live with greater freedom. The issue here is, of course, the proprietary nature of the software running on all those computers. Very importantly, they eliminate our ability to repair, extend, and repurpose a lot of devices. Because these are computers, it's very possible to repurpose them as well. They're not general purpose in nature, but it's up to us how to creatively do something else with them, and modify those devices or products for something else. It's up to us to experiment with. The point is, because we don't have access to the software and to how the hardware works and so on, our ability to do any of these things is limited. So what's the advantage of being able to open up a piece of hardware if repairing it involves having access to the software which runs inside its chips? Even if you could replace a chip which might have blown off or something, you still don't have access to the software. So your ability to fix it yourself, to repair it yourself, doesn't exist, which means that you have to now be at the mercy of somebody else who possesses the source code to that software and all the keys to that hardware, and they are the only people who can repair it. Right. So in this way, because this is something we all understand, because of the proprietary nature of these products, they give excessive control to the developers of these products. Now, I use the word developers to mean people who have built the hardware and the software, people who marketed it, people who service it, all those people put together. puts them at a greater advantage than us, gives them excessive control, and none to us, actually. So we're just consumers of something. We're not really the owner of something. If I'm the owner of a computer, I should be able to do what I wish to do with that computer, which includes the ability to destroy it, to play with it, to experiment with it, and in that process destroy it or have it not function. That's up to me. I should have the liberty to do that. If I cannot replace the chip of a computer 10 years after it was manufactured and is now out of production, that means that even after the manufacturer has stopped producing that computer, they still exert control of what chips can go into it. For example, which wireless card you can use in your laptop depends on what the manufacturer allowed you to use. And that information is encoded onto the BIOS of that laptop. So even many years after that laptop has ceased production, you still cannot replace that the wireless chip. To actually do that, you would have to change the BIOS. You would have to free it up and then replace it with hopefully something which is free in nature. And that would give you real control over that hardware. And that would give you real ownership, because real ownership would then imply your ability to change that wireless chip and things like that. Now, these are the sort of things that should actually anger us. How can we let somebody else exert control on that hardware after so many years of it not being in production? So what I'm talking about here is, having complete software freedom. We don't, when we talk about free software, we don't look at exceptions. We don't look at small areas of the ecosystem of a product, of an operating system, which we are fine letting be as a proprietary software. I don't think that's acceptable to any of us. So having complete software freedom and control is essential, and we all agree with that. The question now that we have to ask ourselves is, we want to connect everything, and we want to connect everything quickly. In our rush to do that, have we traded our freedom and privacy, our freedom to be able to learn things and hack and fix things and extend things, just to be able to possess something maybe cool and convenient, or something we consider very useful? Does usefulness trump the absence of that freedom, the absence of what the sort of privacy we deserve and need, the sort of respect we deserve from the developer of a product like that? So I have written a small phrase in Hindi there. And the reason being that when India was fighting for its freedom, so many years back, initially there were a group of people who would be fine if they didn't have complete independence. And then that narrative changed to demanding complete independence. And that's what we were able to get. What I'm trying to say is that that is also what we are fighting for. We don't ever say that limited freedom is good enough for us, or we are fine if these aspects of something are proprietary, right? So we don't say that, and that's also what we want. So I think it's important to understand why we traded our freedom to have something. It could be a phone, it could be a television, it could be a music player, it could be a light. It could be something like that. How did that thing enter our lives? And then, the part where we try to resolve that existence. So the premise that I'm working on is that unless we mindfully choose the hardware which runs our lives, we are going to slowly start running out of places to run free software. And I think that's a very, very big reality that it exists even right now, even today. We are buying all sorts of hardware at a very rapid pace. We buy it because, maybe sometimes it's fashionable to buy those pieces of hardware. Sometimes we buy them because we might have social pressure. Sometimes we might have pressure from our schools or colleges or workplaces. Or maybe we want to fit in with our friends or family. There are so many reasons. We might not always be in a position to make a choice, but nevertheless, a choice is being made for us. Either we make it or somebody else makes it for us. But the end result is that we might not be mindfully choosing every piece of hardware. We might not be curating it from this singular perspective of software freedom. And then what happens? Well, slowly you run out of places to run free software on. We've actually made a lot of progress over the last 35 years in terms of being able to compute and do our daily computing and running servers and so on free software. Is that what the free software movement is going to get confined to? And then are we going to surround ourselves with all sorts of proprietary software and hardware which doesn't respect us? Is that going to be a reality? If not, then what are we going to do about it? If it is going to become a reality, how are we going to exist in that duality where I don't like proprietary software, I don't have it, I've never wanted it, but now I'm surrounded by it and I don't know what to do? So I think we have to be mindful about our choices. And unless we are mindful about our choices, we can't make different ones, right? So choosing mindfully is important, but the challenge is that we cannot make a different choice if we did not make a deliberate choice in the first place. Let's say we purchased a phone and we didn't worry if it would run proprietary software, if it would require using proprietary services to function. Or maybe we were handed out that phone to use by our workplaces and it's mandatory to use it. Now, we didn't think so much, but to make a different choice, we are going to have to think a lot, isn't it? So that's where the challenge lies. Mindfulness is required to make a different choice, but the challenge is that, you know, initially we didn't make so many deliberate choices, and so, well, it's going to take some time and effort, and that's the first thing I'm going to discuss. How are we going to make different choices? So let's look at it from two perspectives. One is a bottom-up approach and a top-down approach. Bottom-up approach says, okay, forget about everything that you have. Let's start from scratch. Let's assess what my needs are. I need a computer. I need internet access. Maybe I need a few hard disks to store my data. What else do I need? So, well, I list my needs out. I list out what is important for me to live my life, to do my work, and so on. And then there are two ways of having those things, having those computers in a way. You could buy them or you could build them. The point is you still have to study what options are there in front of you. Now, if you bought the wrong thing and it did not allow you to run free software on it, then you're stuck, right? So the whole reason we are doing this bottom-up exercise is so that we are able to deliberately examine every possible option that comes our way that fits into our usability, that fits into our budgets, that fits into what we want to achieve with those tools. And then we make a choice. And the choice, like I said, could be buying something or building something. And we'll come to those questions again in a moment. But this is one way to do it. Forget about everything that you have. This is one way. Another way is to enlist what you have and then say, okay, which one of these can I liberate? And I'll define this term more carefully in a few minutes, but which of these can I liberate? Which means that I have five different gadgets with me. All of them are computers. They all run software. Now, can any of them or all of them or some of them run free software? Up to what level can it run free software? What are the compromises involved? That's one way, because then you're not disposing off with everything that you have. You are, you know, starting with a list of what you have, and then you try to analyze which ones you can liberate. But then maybe you would have to replace the ones that you can't liberate. What are you going to do with those? Are you going to put up with proprietary software? Well, we might put up with it for some time. I wouldn't want to do that. But well, maybe you just don't want to throw it out. You could give it to somebody else. But even that would be a very, bad thing to do, right? Why gift somebody else something which is proprietary, something that we don't want to use ourselves? But anyways, we have to replace those now. So this is one more approach where we can start top down starting with what we have, and then slowly we work on replacing it, and then maybe over a period of time, we have replaced all those things, and we now have things which can allow us to run free software all the time, right? Now, a moment ago, we talked about this debate of buy versus build, right? So now let's look at that. What do we mean by liberate? So I use this term liberated hardware to mean hardware which can run free software, but it wasn't necessarily designed to do so, right? The developers who made that piece of hardware, they didn't design it to run free software. They designed it to fulfill the needs of the market they were trying to address. And incidentally, today, we can run free software on it, right? There's a lot of off-the-shelf hardware, actually, that we can use which fits this definition. Hardware which doesn't come with proprietary software, which doesn't come with free software, it actually has some pretty bad malware in it, if you examine it. But it's not difficult to liberate it. It's not difficult to run free software on it, and it would just require some effort. So the challenge with this approach of trying to have hardware which can run free software is that there are still going to be challenges and compromises. Sometimes we have to put up with binary blobs, bits of software that is opaque to us, for which we don't have access to source code. Sometimes these are firmware for various hardware, like wireless cards and network cards. A lot of other times, it's something that makes a CPU work. It could be something that makes the CPU initialize its RAM and things like that. There could be binary blobs. There could be a need to use non-free drivers or non-free firmware for certain hardware. Let's say the wireless card doesn't allow you to doesn't have a free driver. You would have to use a proprietary driver in that case. Because they are designed to serve a singular purpose by its developers, they might also be difficult to extend, and that limitation could exist in two ways. One way that limitation could exist is in form of its physical limitation. You can't accommodate something else. Another way that limitation would exist in the absence of expansion options. So that is another compromise. Maybe in the short run it might be good enough, but in the long run it might require you to have something better. Finally, there are also times when we have to use specialized tools to liberate that hardware. We might need to use a chip flasher. We might need access to hardware programmers. We might need special screwdrivers to open the chassis of a device, without which we can't really liberate it. So there are those challenges as well. Our ability to access those tools limits what we can do. Quite a few times, the hardware that we liberate is old. The age of that hardware shows up in its performance at times. And one of the reasons why we are able to even liberate it in the first place is because it's not very new. So that's a plus and a minus as well. But that age of the hardware could affect the availability of spare parts, for example. What if something breaks and then you don't have access to spare parts because it's an old hardware, the manufacturer doesn't produce it anymore, and it's tough to now have spare parts. Now, I've been intending to build a website where I could enlist all the liberated hardware options that I have come across myself. And what I generally do is, if I'm trying to solve a problem, I look at it from both the ways. I look at building it from ground up with, few compromises, very few. And I also look at the other way around. What is available in the market which might fit my need and which might also be relatively easy to liberate and reuse for whatever purposes I have in mind. So there are quite a few things like that. Some of them have no compromises in a way. Well, it would be good to have that information out there so that if people are making choices, if they need a way to judge the relative freedom they get with various products, I think that assessment should be documented somewhere. And so, well, this is an upcoming website. It's not there yet, but I hope that in the next couple of weeks, I'm able to put something up. If you want to help with this, I currently look at it to be more India-centric. so that at least people around us can use this information. But I don't see why it could not have a wider perspective. Well, let's look at the other option of building things. A lot of times we don't, when we want a music player, our first way of trying to build it is trying to have it is not to build it. When I say build it, I mean, we're not going to buy components and maybe some PCBs and some amplifiers and, you know, we're not going to do all that. We want to play music, and that's our singular purpose. Well, there are two ways of looking at it. You could buy, you know, you could buy something which could play music, and maybe it allows you to run free software, and you could just do that. And I think that's one great option. But a lot of times today, there are other ways of having the same solution. There are developer hardware tools. Developer hardware is generally, I mean, it's general purpose. You could use it for multiple purposes. But it's not very nice in the sense that it has pins on it. It might not be small sometimes. It might not fit your size requirements or your mobility requirements and so on. But nevertheless, developer hardware is a good platform to build multiple things out of the same board. So that's one thing. There are also Libre hardware designs, free design hardware. Hardware whose design has been shared under a free license by its developer. Now, if you had the ability to fabricate that design, you could fabricate it, and that's a great way to build that hardware yourself. Of course, not all of us can do that. In fact, very few of us can do that. But that, nevertheless, that remains a very good choice, specifically if the source code is under a free license, which means that we can do so many more things with that hardware design. Finally, today, there are a lot of developers who also build kits that you can assemble on your own, which means that those hardwares are special purpose. They're not developer hardware, but they're not pre-assembled for you. You still have to put in some effort to assemble them. And that is, I think, an enjoyable process as well. When you get involved in building something, you also get to understand how it works inside. You also get to understand what it takes to put it together. And tomorrow, if you had to fix it or repair it or extend it, you would be in a better position to do that. It's like if I was using the binary of a software from a repository, I could just use it, yes. But maybe if I compiled it one day and the compilation process was complex, it would teach me about something about that software, what it depends upon, which versions of libraries it prefers, why it prefers them, what compilers it uses, why it works with a certain compiler but doesn't work with something else. Now, that is an experimental process. It definitely takes a lot more time than just downloading the binary. But then it's up to us what we're aiming at. By buying a DIY kit and building and assembling that hardware yourself, you could learn so much more. Maybe the first time you do that, you know, you don't achieve great success. But then over time, your skills might improve, your skill of being able to assemble these things. And then you might notice small nuances about those kits that could have been improved. And that's where you could step in and make those kits better. If something was not strong enough and you thought you knew how you could make it strong enough, you could try something out. There are ways of trying to fabricate a small piece somehow and trying to replace something that came with the kit. Isn't that what we do when we try to understand a piece of software? We open up its source code, and initially it might look very complex and overwhelming. And then what do? We try to make small changes to the source code, and we try to examine the effect of those changes on the program itself. And that examination gives us an understanding about the internals of the program. So similarly with the hardware. But if the hardware has been put together for us in advance by someone else, then it might not be so easy to take apart because special tools are required. So DIY is in that very nice place between ready-made products and something that you have to fabricate entirely on your own. Right? Now, of course, you know, we might say that, look, I'm not a hardware person. I don't know how this works. I don't have any idea on how to fabricate it and so on. Well, that is also what people used to say when we used to tell them, look, source code is something that really empowers you, and they would say, well, we're not programmers. Why do we care about source code? I think it's a similar type of situation, just that we're talking about hardware today. And well, it's in the current scenario, it looks like something which is very important to talk about, because there is so much hardware around us which does not have software which we can control. So while we might lack the skills and knowledge to build products on our own like these, if we do get started, I think we might be able to improve. Our knowledge would be able to improve over time. And that's very important, the existence of communities which can support people who want to take an initiative in this way. That would be extremely important. The existence of these DIY kits would be very important. And there are so many individuals and organizations which are doing a lot in this space. So again, if you know people need pointers on how to get started, I could provide some of those as well. So now let's look at how I tried to build a liberated home for myself. So I have to check about the time. I think there might be about 10 minutes more. So what I'll do is I'll go through the next few slides a little quickly, but look at the essence indeed. So what I want to share first is my code, my value system when it comes to building something or doing something at home. The first tenet of that value system is, and I think that's the core one, is to build what I need so that I can control all that I have. If everything that I need is something that I can build myself, then that also gives me control over everything that's around me, in control over both the hardware and the software. So if I start with that, then, well, the first thing I do is I try to build everything myself, because I don't want to have to depend on somebody else for support or help. Maybe I do not know anybody else who might be doing something similar. So it's important that I learn and do something on my own. Of course, it goes without saying that if there is any sort of software component involved, it has to be free software. And that's not just about the software which goes into that device or into that tool. It's also the software which goes into, say, building that software, the entire tool chain. You know, so I think all those things are equally important. There can be downsides. You might believe that a piece of hardware is possible to liberate, and then you might run into a brick wall, because the board available in India is very different from the one that has been used by free software developers elsewhere when they sort of wrote software for it. And now we are stuck because this board is so different that it would require a lot more effort to do something useful with it. So there can be all sorts of downsides. And I think the important thing is that, well, I always know that if I'm going to do something, there are chances that I would not be able to do with something with it that I had imagined. It's always possible, and there are things that I have which I don't know what to do with them, because I bought them with the intention of doing something with them, and then I realized that I can't do what I need with them, whatever it was. But each of those do provide a lesson in a way. They improve our understanding of how people develop these products. It improve our understanding of what to avoid in future. And tomorrow, if we were building something ourselves, what to have on it, so that we don't make the same mistakes that others have made. You know, we are kinder to the people who are going to use our work. Another thing is, if I'm going to buy something, I don't want to buy something which is a finished product, which is something which is pre-assembled, prefabricated for me. Almost everything that I use, I buy it either as a kit or I buy it, I buy components from all sorts of places, and then I try to put them together. So the point is, since this is the value system with which I want to build my liberated home, if I give up, then this value system is of no consequence, right? It does not give me the path that I want to find. It doesn't help me. It doesn't enable me to help others find that same path as well. So in a sense, I treat myself and my home as a way to test these ideas out, to see the relative ease of use of a solution before I can sort of recommend it to others, or I can productize it myself and give it out to others who I think might find it useful as well. Giving up would not give me any of those advantages. So, well, I think that's important. You have to understand that this road, just like the free software road earlier, is not that easy, but it's fun. It's great fun. There's a lot to learn, and there's a lot of pride to have out of doing something good yourself. So it's worth doing it, you know, for all those reasons. Now, what I have here is some of the things that I use at home, some of the ways I try to solve the problems. I'll go through these very quickly so that we can make some progress onto the other parts. The first thing is about having control over the network. If there are things which have to connect to the network, and you know, all these computers are going to connect and talk to each other, if we don't have control on the network, then we don't have control on how they talk, whether they talk at all, whether they can go to the internet, and so on. So, you know, Nishant gave a talk about networks a couple of years back at LibrePlanet. And this is one of the analogies he likes to draw, that the network is the road on which others are going to walk on. Building that road is not really something, it's not really fun, but it's essential. You can't go anywhere if that road didn't exist. And being, you know, building that road ourselves puts us in control of who travels on that road. And I think that is essential. If we are going to integrate a whole lot of computers in that network, it's essential that we have control on what those computers can do or not do, and how they can harm us or benefit us, and so on. So the network is one of the most important parts of it. I've listed out some of these things here, some of the things that I use. We can probably come back to some of these slides if there is time at the end. The second aspect is self-hosting services. Now, a lot of these devices that we use, the ones that we're complaining about, they are just access points for something which exists on the internet, right? So there is a repository of music that a company owns on the internet, or that it has at least. And then they give us a device to stream music from that archive and play it for us, right? Or there could be something else, let's say a picture frame, which shows us pictures that you've taken, but that thing in itself doesn't have those pictures. It talks to somebody else's computer on the internet, and it fetches those pictures and puts them in a slideshow and shows them to us. Well, if we are going to run free software on all these devices, what sense does it make to connect them to proprietary services or services hosted on somebody else's computer? It does not. So being able to host your own services is very essential. That is one more thing. I'll skip this. So, you know, so we were discussing about all these aspects of building a liberated home, where you store your data, how you operate your, you know, gadgets, like things which put on your lights or things which monitor your temperature or do your lighting, and, you know, all those things. The final question that we should ask ourselves is, you know, when we have physical objects, we can inherit them. I can have a very large collection of books, and it's possible for somebody else to use those books and to learn from them as well, and I can pass them around. And we know these things. We don't like to use DRM protected media for exactly that purpose. But when it comes to personal digital assets, you know, pictures, videos, audio recordings, books, documents, how do we sort of archive them? You know, how do we archive them for the long run? I think that's a very important question. When people use proprietary services and, you know, somebody else's computer to host their data, they don't even own that data. They don't really have unconditional access to it. And then archival is something even further distant from that. So I think Well, one possible way to do that could be to use self-hosted free software. But I think this is something we should, each of us should consider. We probably should have an archival strategy for each of us, each of our families, so that we know how to use this data after we are gone also, maybe. Yeah, so now the last aspect of, so building the home for myself is not sufficient. If I can desire it and I can want it and I can build it, I'm sure there are going to be so many other people who want it at least as well. And at least there are going to be people who care deeply about free software. At least they shouldn't have to compromise. Now, what I do is I run a small store called the Libre Tech Shop. And my intention there is to offer these products to people. And the point I'm trying to make is that that's not just sufficient. It's not sufficient just to run a store like that. What I'm trying to say is that refurbishing hardware, manufacturing new hardware, or liberating what is available, these three strategies offer us a great way of helping others as well. So if I know how I can solve one problem with me, let's say you have a young child in the house, you want to play certain songs on the television. Now, there could be multiple strategies, but at least I know one strategy or two strategies which don't involve using proprietary software at all. It should at least be possible for people who care deeply about free software to adopt some of those strategies. Yeah, so I'm just finishing up.
Yes, let's get up. So
I just wanted to remind you
with people so they have passions to send them your.
Sure, we can take the questions.
Yeah.
Some pictures of stuff that I've been building and liberating.
That's super exciting.
That's super exciting. Wonderful talk.
All right.